Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
I'm Pete.
Today's show, we'll be talking about eye health. In particular, we'll be discussing low vision clinics and doctors who specialize in low vision patients, why and when you might want to actually see an eye care professional. And then we interviewed a friend of ours who recently had surgery for cataracts and retinal tears. But first, to our tip of the week. And the tip is, if you're losing your vision, you don't really have to go it alone. There are plenty of resources out there and people who can help you. You just have to find them. In particular, we'd like to dedicate this show to John's mother. And his mother, in her late 80s, very recently went blind totally due to hemorrhages in both eyes. And she's having a tough time adjusting because this is very new to her that she just went blind. Fortunately, somebody had the good sense to hook her up with the Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired here in Rochester. And fortunately, the Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired had the good sense at her very first appointment to promise to set her up with a receiver for Reach Out Radio, which is our local radio reading service. So she's on her way to developing more independence in her newly blinded state. And the way she's doing that is by hooking into all the right resources.
You know, and that's interesting. I think that's particularly a problem associated with people that have some vision problems as they get older. In some sense, I was kind of lucky because I was blind more or less since birth. So I was kind of plugged into different resources and different ways of doing things. I was younger at the time and it was more easy to make modifications. But often when you're older, you're not plugged into that whole system. And so you're not aware that these services exist. And you may think that you're the only one and it may be impossible to do certain tasks like reading if all of a sudden you can't see anymore or just getting around and things like that.
Yeah, watching television, knitting, cooking, whatever. You might think it's hard, but, you know, if you're new at being blind, someone else is there who's been blind longer than you have, and they've probably worked out a way to do it.
So you're not alone.
Among other things, one of our sources of information on any kind of health care is these white papers and health alerts that come from Johns Hopkins Medical School. And I thought it was an omen. We had already decided we were going to do this show about eye health. And sure enough, what email note did I get from Johns Hopkins this week but one about controlling glaucoma to prevent vision loss? You know, whatever your medical issue is that you're interested in, Johns Hopkins has lots of great information on that. And if you want to sign up, you can go to their web address, which is www.JohnsHopkinsHealthAlerts.com. Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll be talking about low-vision clinics and doctors who specialize in treating low-vision patients. Low vision means that even with regular eyeglasses or contact lenses or medicine or surgery, people find everyday tasks difficult to do, whether it's reading the mail, shopping, cooking, watching TV, or writing can seem challenging to them. In Rochester, we have the Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired, and they can be reached by telephone at area code 585-232-1111. Or online, they actually have a couple of web addresses, www.abvi-goodwill.com or www.seegreatthings.com. Now, how positive is that?
That's pretty good. And there are organizations like that in virtually every town around the country. You can find some kind of resource like that. So we knew about ABVI since it's in Rochester and that's where we are. But I actually did a search in Google and I just put in low vision clinics. And there were just tons of listings in different parts of the country, in different cities, different facilities. So if you're looking for one in your area, what I would do is in your favorite search engine and use Google, search for low vision clinics and then your state and city, and you'll hopefully get places that are close to you.
And if you don't, one thing that you're going to see popping up on your search results is an online resource called lowvision.com. So that's all one word, www.lowvision.com, which is an online resource that'll provide answers and solutions on low vision rehabilitation, eye health, eye disease, for anybody who's got a visual impairment.
And what's nice about that is it collects a lot of this information in one place. So you can find out what questions to even ask. I mean, sometimes you might not even know what resources are available, what questions to ask your doctor. And this can be a useful place just to inform yourself if you're newly have some vision problems and need to know what to do. But these low vision clinics are very different than going to a commercial eyeglass store where they'll fit you for contact lenses or regular glasses. The low vision clinics often have very specialized resources and very different types of things for you. When I was younger and could see a bit more, I actually went to one of these places and they outfitted me with glasses that were very thick, but I was able to read by putting my nose very close to the books, but it did give me some improved vision for reading. But they're very good about looking about what types of things you need. So for example, sometimes magnification isn't all that's needed. Sometimes you need some light in addition to the magnification. So they have special magnifiers with built-in lights and things like that. Or they may even recommend something like these closed-circuit TV reading systems for you if you need that. Well, in fact, when I was in public school, I couldn't see well enough, even with any kind of glasses, to read the blackboard. And they recommended a little handheld telescope, a little monocular for me. And it was kind of folded up with a bunch of prisms, so it actually fit in your hand. If you extended it, it would have been, you know, probably 6 or 8 inches long. But it was a very handy device, and I used it all through my public school education to look at the blackboard and things that are far away. So there's all kinds of resources available at these specialty low vision clinics, and they're well worth checking out in your area.
You are listening to Viewpoints.
This week's focus topic is why and when to go see an eye care professional. Let's start by putting things into perspective, as it were, by listening to a short clip from comedian Brian Regan.
I'm wearing new contacts. I just had my prescription changed after 6 years. You ever wait that long? Then you get new lenses. You're like, man, I could have been seeing things. How can instantly improve vision not be at the top of your to-do list? I'll see tomorrow. I don't have time. I don't have time to see clearly. No, I don't. No, I can't do that.
So what's interesting about that clip is, first of all, it mirrors the reticence that many people have about seeing doctors in general. I mean, they just don't want to go see a doctor. They think some terrible things are going to happen, or they may find a problem. So realize when you go to a doctor, they can actually help you with some of these problems that you may not think that they can help you with. So it's well worth checking with your eye doctor to see what they can do.
So in particular, if you know you have a problem with your eyes, or even if you just know that some of your relatives have specific problems with your eyes, many of these conditions are actually hereditary, and it's a really good idea to go get your eyes checked and just let the doctor keep on top of the situation. So although for a typical person who's got good vision and healthy eyes and doesn't have, you know, other systemic problems like high blood pressure or whatever, they recommend you get a baseline eye exam somewhere around age 40 before you start experiencing some of these adult eye diseases like glaucoma and,
well, cataracts, and people get nearsighted around 40. The muscles in your eyes, you know, can't focus quite as easily and stuff. So that's about the time when things start changing.
Right. Now, in our family, because Pete's problem is congenital glaucoma, he was born with glaucoma and it's hereditary, this put our children at way greater risk than the general population. These days, they test all newborns for congenital glaucoma. When our children were born, which was 24, 26 years ago, they were aware of this being a problem, but it wasn't a routine screening for newborns. So we took our newborns into the eye doctor to get them tested. Of course, the first one, it was kind of funny. This was our first visit to this doctor. We got the guy's name, and we showed up for a visit. We had a three-week-old baby, the two of us in our 30s. Pete's parents happened to be here that week, and so they were in their late 50s. We walk in. All the other patients are, you know, even older than that. And our patient was the three-week-old infant, and she was fine. And 2 years later, we brought our son in as an infant, and he was fine. But, you know, they get checked every year for glaucoma, even though they're nowhere near 40.
And now they get checked a little less frequently now that they're in their 20s. But we used to check them at least once or twice a year when they were younger just to make sure nothing was going wrong with their eyes. So if you have some family history that sort of makes you think that you ought to get checked, that's a good reason to get the kids checked. And, of course, the other reason to go to an eye doctor is if you have some specific problem. I mean, if your eyes are runny or itchy or hurting or you're not seeing properly, I mean, that's more obvious. But doctors can be a good thing sometimes.
That's right. Now, there's all different types of medical professionals, and we thought we'd just review this kind of quickly. So an ophthalmologist is difficult to spell, but that's a medical doctor who specializes in eye care, usually both medically and surgically. An optometrist is an OD versus an MD, which is an eye doctor who can treat some eye diseases and disorders, but if you need surgery, you actually need to go see the MD, which is the ophthalmologist. The optometrist also can check your prescription for eyeglasses or contact lenses, and they'll do the fittings for that. The optician specializes in the fitting and fabrication of eyeglasses, contact lenses, low vision aids, etc. But an ophthalmologist or an optometrist has to give them the prescription for what the glasses or contact lenses, etc. need to be. And then the other category is the ocularist. This is the person who fabricates and fits ocular prostheses if you've actually lost an eye due to trauma or illness. And they can all be a great help depending on what your particular issue is. And they should all work together. You know, if you go to the optometrist and the optometrist notices that you've got some issue that they're not licensed and or qualified to handle, they'll refer you up the chain until you get to somebody who can. And you should follow their instructions.
So another great resource we found for eye diseases, eye care, eye issues, and how to deal with low vision is the Lighthouse. So you can go to www.lighthouse.org, and they have many useful links on that page, and we'll talk about some of the specific things that they discussed.
So they describe the structure of the eye, what the healthy eye is supposed to look like and do. They have a long list of common visual problems and treatments. We found another website which is going to fit exactly the same description. It's called geteyesmart.org, so geteyesmart.org. This is a website that's hosted by the American Academy of Ophthalmology. And they also have lots of great hints for you and information on eye conditions or common symptoms. And you can search according to either one. So if you go to the eye doctor and you get a diagnosis, for example, of diabetic retinopathy, you can look that up. But if all you know is you haven't been to the eye care professional yet, but you know what your symptoms are, so you see blurriness or you have some discharge or dark spots or whatever, you can also look under whatever your particular symptom is, and that'll give you some ideas of what you should be doing about it and who you should be seeing.
And there are lots of different kinds of things that you should look out for in your eyes. Lots of things can go wrong, but there are many things that are treatable these days, and the medical community has come a long way in dealing with some of these issues that decades ago were very difficult to treat or deal with. And that includes things like glaucoma, macular degeneration. I mean, there are new treatments, new pills, new drops for these things, and they're a lot easier to deal with.
Now for this week's high-tech item, we'll be talking about modern surgical procedures to fix various eye problems. Among us and our friends, we've got an awful lot of collective experience with eye surgery, and we thought we'd share with you what some of these are like from the perspective of the patient. So we interviewed this friend of ours who just within the last couple of years developed cataracts in both eyes, and then as a partial consequence of that also got some small tears in his retina. I know this sounds really scary, but you know, the whole procedure really wasn't so bad, and he's very upbeat about it and is really happy with the way things turn out. So here's a friend of ours, Sai. You've actually recently had cataracts removed and retinal tears repaired?
Yes.
So we thought we'd ask about both of those. Which one would you like to start with?
Well, I could start at the beginning.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I noticed that in bright sunlight, sometimes things were a little bit foggy looking, and my wife has a very good high-quality computer monitor, and one day I was looking at that, and it looked a little foggy, and I thought my glasses were dirty, which they were, so I washed them off a little bit, but I still could see this fogginess, so I washed them some more, and it didn't go away. And then I realized, well, took my glasses off, and I closed one eye and the other, I could see that the fogginess was actually in one of my right eye. So I thought, well, I'll probably have cataracts. So I went to the doctor, and I had cataracts in both eyes, actually. So when things progressed far enough, it was concluded that we would have a cataract surgery. So what they do is they replace the lens in your eye with an artificial lens. So we actually had the opportunity to design my vision, because I was very nearsighted and always wore glasses since I was 12. And one of the options I had was to leave me nearsighted, because I was used to that and I had been coping with that for all these years. But I also could have vision so that I could focus at infinity without any glasses. So that was another option, and I chose that. So for one eye, we picked focusing at infinity, and for the other eye, we picked focusing slightly less than that, a little closer up. That's an inexact science, because the eye swells up and then contracts again after the after the surgery. So you don't know for sure what the focal length is going to be when the thing comes back. But my doctor nailed it, and both eyes are exactly as we designed them. So I'm very happy with how the results of that.
It sounds like you're almost better off now than you were beforehand.
In some ways, yes.
Do you wear glasses at all, or?
I buy over-the-counter reading glasses that I use for reading books, and another one with a little less powerful prescription for looking at my computer monitor.
Oh, okay.
So you said that you had observed fogginess in the one eye, but not in the other eye.
Yes.
Were both cataracts sufficiently ripe to get removed by
no,
then?
No, that's why we had to wait after I made that observation. Some time went by before we actually did the surgeries.
I remember you mentioning after the surgery how you said that the colors on the TV look so natural afterwards that you hadn't realized what you were missing even.
It turns out that my job, my last job at Xerox, was an image quality expert. So I was pretty familiar with the idea that if you had the scattering going on that you'd be losing color. But it really came home to me when I walked out to the mailbox and saw my wife's flowers that she'd planted there. And wow, look at that color,
After the surgery.
Yeah. After the surgery, I was really missing a lot. So that was great.
So that was just an outpatient thing? You went into the surgery center, and how long did the whole thing take?
I don't remember exactly, but it was on the order of an hour or so. Most of the time was waiting around afterwards. They had to check to make sure that everything went okay.
And for both eyes?
For both eyes, yeah. But they were done a different, 3 weeks apart or something like that.
And the post-recovery for that was what?
It was about a day. It was actually more like a week. The big thing was a day or so, and I had to wear a thing over my eye when I was sleeping so that I wouldn't poke it while I was sleeping. It's quite delicate after the surgery, so you have to be very careful. The other thing is I had some nausea problems, and I called the doctor, and he said, well, that's pretty normal because after the surgery.
So did you have any pain before, during, or after?
No pain before. I actually didn't really have any pain after. I wasn't really painful. The problem that I had is a problem that many people have after this kind of surgery, and that's the vitreous humor in my eye thickened in response to the trauma of the surgery. And when your vitreous humor is thick, it pulls on the retina. So one morning I woke up with a lot of floaters and, well, things didn't look right, so I went in to see the doctor, and he said, well, yeah, you do have a retinal tear, and we're going to have some surgery to do that. So he scheduled for the next morning. And he said, it's a very small little tear. I said, I can probably close this with 50 shots. Shots is what they call the laser surgery, and they shoot the laser in there. You know, they do it, they pulse, and then another pulse, and then another pulse. Mm-hmm.
So it's nothing physical, it's just a beam of light.
Just a beam of light, right. So all what they're doing is they're welding the thing back to the wall of the eye. So we went in, and so I'm counting because every one hurts. So, and I got to 125, and I thought, you know, I think this tear must have gotten worse overnight, and it did. It got much worse. So that happened, and then I went back for a recheck and found another tear, so I had to have that one repaired, and then I went back for another recheck and had another tear.
Gee.
And this one was way over in the corner, way out of the way, so that you couldn't get to it with a laser. Mm-hmm. So they had to do a cryogenic procedure where they stuck this very cold thing in my eye. And that was pretty painful and caused the eye to look like a maraschino cherry when it was finished. Mm-hmm. But it did work, and it fixed it. And my doctor says he thinks it's unlikely to have another tear. I'm not sure how he knows that, but I guess it's kind of unusual to have as many as three.
Mm-hmm. That was all in one eye?
No, it was in both eyes.
So they think it's possible that was a side effect of the cataract? Procedure?
Yes, evidently it's a common side effect.
Oh. Okay.
And one of the ways you know you have it is if I'm like at night, if I move my eye side to side, I see a little flash of light. Mm-hmm. That light is completely synthetic. It's caused by the vitreous humor pulling on the retina. Mm-hmm. And if it's thin, if your vitreous humor is thin, it won't do that. But when it's thickened like that, the inertial, you know, impulse that you get from turning the eye causes the vitreous humor to pull on the retina, which responds by showing you a flash of light that's doesn't correspond to actually any light. Of the three tears that I had, one of them was, I called the doctor and went in to look because I was seeing floaters. Floaters was the real thing because when the retinal tears, some little stuff gets in the vitreous humor and you can see it. It's floating around in there. The other two had no symptoms and they were found by just rechecks.
Regular eye exams then.
Right, an eye exam, they guess, oh, I see another little tear there.
Mm-hmm. Wow, so how often do you go back to the eye doctor after all that?
Oh, he said, the one doctor said he didn't want to see me for another year, so I think I'm pretty much sort of out of the woods.
Mm-hmm. So then during this whole thing, before they like said you were out of the woods and said you didn't have to come back for a year, how often were they checking you?
Oh, every, about 2 or 3 months, I think, at the beginning, because I was definitely at risk for this. And you can't necessarily tell, I found out. I mean, the one time I was able to tell, the other two times I had no idea.
Right, so it's just the checkups that caught it. Interesting. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And your vision still...
I've got 20/20 in both eyes now.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool. I wear regular over-the-counter sunglasses and, you know, I just have some reading glasses. Other than that, I'm in great shape.
So just to let our listeners know, Cy isn't 12 anymore. He's actually in his mid-60s. And as you can tell, it wasn't such a horrible experience. I mean, his eyes were degrading. He was seeing some differences. He went to see his doctor promptly. And they decided on a plan of action of what to do. All these procedures were outpatient things, and the after effects were a day or two of just being good and then going back to the doctor. Actually, the other biggest side effect was they wouldn't let him lift heavy things for about a month or so. He's the bass player in our jazz band, and so we just carried his equipment for him during that time. But other than that, he did real well. It was relatively easy, although it was good he went back for his routine checkups to check on other issues as they developed. And now he's even better than new.
Isn't that nice?
Not so bad.
Right. So one thing I noticed about Cy's story is that, you know, back when Pete was a kid, which was in the 1950s and 60s, and he had all of these eye operations, every single one of them, they'd go at him with a knife because that was the only option they had, and he'd be in the hospital for days.
I was there for a week or two when I was a kid. Yeah, right.
Right.
It was a horrible experience.
Sometimes with sandbags.
Right.
Keeping his head still. And, you know, you heard Cy talk about this. He was never in the outpatient surgical center for more than an hour or so. Most of that was waiting. The next day he was up around doing everything except maybe carrying his amp for his bass. And the other thing is, you know, these procedures, they were all done very differently. So the first retinal tear repair they did was just done with pulses of a laser, and they can shoot the laser right through the clear part of your eye in the front, and they tune the frequency so that it just gets absorbed in the back of the eye and it can repair all of these tears in the retina. Then he had the one that was not in a position where they could get at it with the laser, so they did it with cryogenic techniques, which is just very, very cold stuff. And the cataract procedure used to be a big deal, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, that was a big deal. But these days they make this little tiny incision. They go in with an ultrasonic device that shatters the old lens and they suck that out. And then they have the new lens all rolled up. They slip that in this little teeny hole. It opens up into position. And as you can tell, you know, Cy's vision was restored to being a whole lot better than it started.
Right. When I was young and they took out the cataracts, they didn't replace it with a new plastic lens because they didn't have that technology. So you used to have to wear these huge, thick, like Coke bottle glasses in order to see anything.
Right.
So things have changed a lot, and there are lots of options these days.
In fact, a few weeks ago when we did a show on meeting and dating, we interviewed Steve and Marilyn, and Marilyn had congenital cataracts, and she had the procedure Pete just described when she was young, so that was 50, 60 years ago, and, you know, she's still wearing the big, thick glasses to get what vision she's able to use now.
You know, and cataracts are one of those things, that's the lens of your eye getting fogged. I think if you live to be old enough, chances are that your lenses are going to get slightly foggy and eventually you're going to have some cataracts. So at least you know there are pretty easy things they can do about it these days.
So Pete, after all this talk about taking good care of your eyes and visiting eye care professionals, can you tell everybody what the best advice you ever got from an eye doctor is?
Well, my eye problems have been very difficult over the years with many complications and before the technology changed. But the best advice I ever got from an eye doctor was where to buy a tandem bike that would fit Nancy on front and me on the back, because most tandems are made to fit the bigger person on front. She's quite a bit smaller than I am.
And we're still grateful to the eye doctor for that piece of advice every time we hop on the bike. That's it for this week's show. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about reading, in particular, radio reading services. You may think that everybody who's listening to this show knows about radio reading services because that's who it's broadcast through, but some people are listening to the podcast. We'll be talking about NFB Newsline, which is another way you can get accessible magazines and newspapers, and about Daisy Readers on the PC. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to reachout@wxxi.org or call us at area code 585-258-0333, and we will try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. This program was hosted by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show by going to our website at wxxi.org/reachout and clicking on the podcast's link. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.